ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. It's good to be with you again. My name is Henrik. This is Red Ice Radio, and we are here with Fabian Fjelling, also known as Erik Johansson. He's behind a really good initiative called Granskning Sverige, which roughly translates to Review Sweden or Examination Sweden, Checkup Sweden, Inspection Sweden, I guess you could say. He and others actually behind this project have been doing some great work getting in touch with journalists and politicians, recording their calls, confronting them on certain issues, and it's just a really, really valuable resource. And of course, there's a couple of events that have occurred recently with him being doxxed, among other things, and having journalists show up at his door that we're going to talk more about later. So this is going to be good. So thank you for coming on, Fabian. It's great to have you here.
Thank you very much for having me on. It's a pleasure and honor to be on your show.
Very good. Thank you. So tell us a bit about Granskning Sverige or Review Sweden. Is it you who are behind it? How did you get involved, if not?
No, it's not. I'm one of the main figures, you could say. But the so-called founder is the pseudonym Johan Andersson, and his identity is still unknown. It's actually unknown to me, too. I have been working with Granskning Sverige since, or Review Sweden, which I usually call it when I speak or write in English.
So he's a Russian spy.
Yeah, of course. He's a Russian spy paid by Putin and wants to destabilize the Swedish society.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm good to clarify that right off the gates here, you know.
Yeah. So. No, but the thing is, I heard one of his first interviews and I thought, finally somebody who has real questions to the establishment. And I contacted him and with a whole list of questions that I thought he could have in his mind for coming interviews. And his reply to that email was pretty much, you don't want to join us or join me or us? And I said, yeah, sure, I'll join you. I'll ask questions. And then I started making those phone calls and recordings and interviews. And so I've been with Review Sweden pretty much from the start, but it's not my idea. It's Johan Andersson, and he's still an unknown person in Sweden.
Now, for those who don't know, tell us about some of the prominent people, both you, but also overall of what Review Sweden has, who they've contacted and kind of what positions they have, so they know that it's like you guys are kind of on the front lines calling up people who are, both in politics, but also in media, discussing specific issues with them. Basically, to try to get closer to the truth of the matter, you're basically doing the job that Swedish journalists have just completely, utterly given up on.
Yeah. It's pretty much we call a lot the journalists since they are very important in pushing the agenda in Sweden, and we ask them to clarify when they brush over important issues. But we also do call politicians as much as we can. Usually we get to talk to the experts on politicians usually don't know that much themselves. They usually have some political advisors. Yes. So then we usually get the political advisors that we get to interview or talk to, and usually it ends up with them hanging up because they don't have any answers to our questions. And you can say that our basic question is there a Swedish people? And are you evil if you have the opinion that you belong to the Swedish people and that ethnicity has anything to do with it? It's pretty much, if you answer yes to the question that there is a Swedish people, then all the other questions come pretty much naturally. Because then if you take a decision politically and you think about what effect does this have for the Swedish people, many of the decisions that Swedish politicians take are detrimental to the Swedish people. And that becomes obvious if you really don't let them get away from that question, so to say. And also, it's a very important question to make people realize that just because you are of the opinion that the Swedish people exist and that there is a value in preserving the Swedish people or a Swedish people, that doesn't mean you're evil and detest all other peoples in the world. You can still be a good, considerate, nice person, even if you believe that Swedish people exist and that you are a part of the Swedish people. It doesn't mean that you hate other peoples.
I know it's pretty simple, isn't it? But this seems to be a taboo nonetheless. So what is the ideology of GS, I'll call it for short, Granskningsverige? Is this something that you guys discussed, for example, with Johan Andersson, the founder, before you came on? Is like, well, let's try to stick to this, or don't talk about this, or something? Or do you guys have free range, pretty much?
Yeah, it's very free. I mean, it's very, I mean, it's we call it a citizens initiative, and it is really a citizens initiative, even though I would say Johan and I and a few more prominent figures are kind of, how should I say, setting the tone a little bit in the group. But anyone can ask any questions they like. That is kind of the main thing, that to have a working democracy, you have to be allowed to ask whatever question you like. So we don't say, don't ask that question. We say, yeah, sure, go ahead. Ask that question if there's something that we haven't thought about before. And we try to, we do have a little bit of contact with each other. And we try to, how should I say, help each other with, okay, so you're interested in this issue. If you ask that, then this could be a possible direction that the discussion goes, and then you have these follow-up questions that you could come up with. So we have a little bit of contact, but everybody are free to do whatever they like. We just try our concepts or ideas against each other before maybe somebody make a call. But often it's also that you read something that is just insanely stupid in the Swedish press, and you just pick up the phone and call the journalist immediately. And those are usually the calls that are the most most effective, most what's it called, dramatic, maybe.
Yeah.
It gets the most views, because there's so many others in Sweden who reads these articles and think that this is really insane what they're printing, and it feels so relieving to hear somebody ask the question that you think, I would like to ask this journalist these things. And I think that's one of the reasons why we have been quite successful, that there are so many that do get irritated by the media brushing over important issues for the Swedish people.
You bring some common sense to the equation, basically, and also gives you know, yourself, of course, and people listening to your show, the opportunity to, like, as you say, hearing these people actually being confronted on some of these absolutely just ridiculous, off the wall, most stupid remarks you can ever imagine, and just to not have them be let off the hook. I've always felt that the journalists, and this is true in many other countries too at this point, but they live in their own little isolated bubble. It's like they are segregated from the rest of reality, and they have a narrative that they push, and they never get kind of, you know, confronted on these issues and speak with real people, so to speak, that are actually, you know, living out there in the real world.
Exactly.
So it's, I mean, this is a great initiative by you guys.
Exactly. And it's we have brought up this rape catastrophe that is coming down on Sweden. For instance, I made one call a while ago where it was in the headlines, 5 Swedes arrested for gang rape on Amorella, which is one of these party boats that goes between Stockholm and Finland. So they go over and there's discos and stuff, and they just go over and back, and there's a lot of party on the boat. And this is something that, you know, many of these young men immigrants, they cannot handle that. There was a woman raped on this boat, and they got arrested in Finland, and the headlines in Sweden was 5 Swedes arrested for rape. And we checked that out, and none of them had a Swedish passport. All of them were from Somalia, Iraq, or wherever it was.
Yeah.
So I called that journalist and asked, on what basis do you call them Swedish? They didn't. None of them had Swedish passports, and it becomes a... Yeah, it ends up with him hanging up as usual, because they don't have an answer.
I wonder how that headline then of like 5 Swedes, you know, rape, stands in comparison to the other concept that you brought up before, the other question that you brought, which is, does the Swedish people exist, right?
So, yeah, exactly.
So, no, they don't, but these guys are Swedes, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't remember quite that phone call, but I think I asked that exactly. How, on what basis do you call them Swedes?
Yeah.
And then it's like, yeah, well, they were in Sweden or something like that, or they have a Swedish passport. I don't quite remember, but
yeah,
that's usually it. If they are in Sweden, they're Swedish, or if they have gotten a Swedish citizenship, they are Swedish. And that you can also discuss for a long time. I have a long discussion with one of the establishment journalists calling me, which we call Bonnier calls Gies. And that's usually more interesting when journalists call me, because then they can't hang up because they have called me.
Right, right.
So there I've actually got a chance to talk to a journalist for, I think, almost an hour on issues like if the Swedish people exist. And that's one of our most, or one of my most popular, most viewed clip. And it's very eye-opening for people who have been living in the, how should I say, brainwashed bubble of Swedes don't exist.
Yep, the Pravda, the thought control kind of climate we have, it's absolutely amazing. We can talk more about that later. But so what made you wake up to some of these issues? How long have you been, you know, aboard on this? And obviously before you decided to actually speak out and do something about this, what was it like for you?
Well, I have been reading. I have a job where I can read a lot, and I was starting out, my starting point was the 9/11 issue, and I kind of realized that there's something that's not really quite right here. So I started reading a few books on it, and I realized that there's definitely something that's not right here. And I promised myself that, okay, I'm going to read everything I can get my hands on, and I'm not going to disregard anything before I've read it myself. And then I kind of realized that you kind of limit yourself by somebody say that this guy is Nazi, he's a racist, this guy is or whatever, and then you don't read what they have written. And then I realized that many of these people who get a label from the establishment, they have some really important issues, and they are usually covering it in a very good way. So I realized that I am being limited here by taking in what other people say about different writers or opinion makers that have been labeled as something for you not to listen to them.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my starting point. And then I started expanding my scope, so to say, after I realized that 9/11 is something really strange that is oversimplified in mainstream media, and they don't even look at all these very important and interesting issues around 9/11, they did brush it over and say, so it's 12 or whatever, 19 crazy Arabs that attacked the United States, which is just ridiculous. And I started expanding the scope to history and see, have I really been told the truth here? And I realized that a lot of stuff in history is not true if you dive into the details.
And that kind of thought crime territory here now.
Yeah, exactly. And that kind of leads into, is race a fact of life? Is it evil to consider race?
Mm.
And I can tell you also that I married, my wife is not ethnic Swedish, she's ethnic Korean.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been in my, you could say it's in my family also, that you kind of understand that race does exist. We are two different races, me and my wife. That I acknowledge that fact doesn't make me love her less. I still love her as the most wonderful person in the world. But I do realize that race is a fact of life. And if you realize that, then the step is, you know, not that far from, is there a Swedish people? And you kind of have to answer yes to that question. And then you have to ask, but the politicians in Sweden, who are they supposed to speak for? And it's pretty obvious that they should speak for the Swedish people in the first place. But they are definitely not doing that, Swedish politicians.
No, they're not. Most definitely. This is a very sensitive question. I think they've even taken out the word or the concept race out of much of the legislation. Well in Sweden, so it's like a non-definition, which is, you know, which makes it interesting with these kinds of contradictory concepts and things like that somehow Swedes are maybe uniquely, let's say, evil, or we're privileged or something like that. There's times when we can be singled out as a group, right? And there's exactly. other times where we don't even exist at all. Sometimes we don't, kind of like Ingrid Lundfors said in her presentation to you know, that big meeting, even the king and the queen of Sweden was there too. Yeah. And she talked about that there isn't any Swedish people and there's always been immigration and none of this actually exists, right?
Yeah.
You know?
And I mean, in a healthy nation, if someone said that to the Swedish king, it would be an uproar. People stand up and walk out on her.
It was a later uproar, right? By like regular people out there seeing this, but not in the audience at the time.
No, exactly.
No. Oh, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's also one of our questions there. If there are no races, who can be subject to racism?
Yeah.
That's one of our main questions that we ask people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, but it's still a, I don't know, it is still a long stretch. I mean, I come from a similar background too, if you will. I was into geopolitics and conspiracy and corruption and these kinds of things, and looking at things in a different light, you know, trying to figure out why things were as they were in the world and why certain things happen. And even more importantly, maybe not as much, you know, how maybe 9/11 happened. That's an interesting question that should be discussed, but I was... At the time, we're interested in how it was being used, right? How it was, how they were benefiting from this, if you will. Because out of this, you got things such as the Iraq War. They did, of course, invade Afghanistan before this. But then since that point, you've had the War on Terror and all these lies about WMDs and all that stuff, right? But that still is, at the time, you know, looking into 9/11 and stuff like that, still a long stretch to go from that to race. I still know a lot of people within the alternative media that was still kind of more on the left. In the earlier days of the 9/11 movement, that they didn't talk about those kinds of things. Was there anything specifics that kind of pulled you in that direction, or what happened?
Well, I kind of have to say also that race for me is not the most important thing in life. I have become religious from my studies. I have turned traditional Catholic. That for me is pure truth. But that's where I've ended up. And I think I'm pretty sure I will stay at that point, even if I continue reading, because everything, how should I say, connects when you have the religious view of things. Like, why is Putin demonized? Well, he's saying that Russia's identity is the Russian Orthodox Church. He's putting himself underneath Christ and God. And that is very sensitive for the establishment. They don't like that. It's pretty consistent that if somebody does that, he's going to be demonized. But then what pulled me to realize race, I can't really think about something special. But I've read about the Nazis, the you know, Germany Nazi and all that stuff. And I don't have the traditional view of Germany. I think it was what came down during the Second World War on the German people is just a total disaster and immense suffering. Because why? I don't really understand why that happened, but they were proud of their race. And as long as they were left alone, people say, yeah, the Germans were aggressors, but I don't agree with that.
No, I don't agree with
that. No. But they were very proud of their race, and they had a lot of focus on race. And obviously, it worked. It worked very well for Germany. They turned around from starving to be the strongest nation in the world in a few years.
Yeah.
I guess that partly woke me up to race, but at the same time, I think also even my own marriage being interracial also had part in making me wake up for race, so to say.
Yeah, so it kind of became more obvious maybe when you were with someone different race. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my wife has some personality traits that I consider to be Asian. She can absorb a book in no time. She can just read it and she knows it. And that, I think, is pretty Asian, that, that they can just absorb information in a large amount in a short time, while as Europeans, I believe, are maybe a little bit better in combining different, they're not as good as just absorbing information, but maybe a bit better in combining the to new knowledge, the knowledge that they have absorbed, so to say.
Mm. Yeah, interesting. So do you think that the elite then, in a way, the globalists, whatever you want to call them, the people at the top layers of politics and business and banking and all these kinds of things, they want to put a lid on these kinds of issues because they, on some level, think that they're like saving the world from another rise of a Nazi Germany. That they equate kind of, if you think in those terms, it is going to lead to like a Holocaust or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, no, I don't think they have that honest intention, but that is definitely part of the thought control tool. I mean, if you start thinking about do I belong to race and you are white, then the thought chain goes like, am I part of a race? Yeah, I think I am. I'm part of a people, and I'm white. Can I be proud of this? Yeah, I think I can be proud of that. Is there anyone else in history who've been proud of this? Yeah, the most proud person because he's white, I suppose, is Hitler, and that killed 6 million Jews. So, no, I don't want to be a mass murderer, so I don't think that way anymore. So it kind of stops the thought already in the seed stage, so to say, because you're afraid of thinking like a mass murderer, and then you have to think about, is it true, that picture, or not? And even if it is true, does it make you a potential mass murderer just because some other white person who was proud of his race was a mass murderer?
Right.
That kind of implies that there's a racial, like it's an inherent property amongst white people that if we are proud to be white, we become mass murderers. And right. That's a pretty racist thought in my opinion.
Well, it then we're back in the camp where it legitimizes the concept of race, which is interesting.
Yeah. So, exactly.
So it's almost like, I mean, it's obviously an extremely like simplified version of what you said, but I think it's true that many think like this, that they have to basically do a complete opposite direction than what they think that Germany was about or something in the 1930s.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? They virtue
signal. They've hammered in the evilness of Germany and their race, the pride of race. And that's the symbol of evil today. That means that you need to be as far away from that as possible, because otherwise you get kind of it's contagious evil that comes otherwise, yeah. If you think that way.
Yeah, exactly. It is contagious. That's a good term. Yeah, which is obviously ridiculous. I mean, there's how far is this going to go in terms of like guilt by association? It was like, well, I mean, Hitler used the alphabet. He was breathing air. Yeah, I mean, come exactly. on, he was drinking water.
Yeah.
I mean, what?
Yeah, exactly.
What do we do here?
I've thought that before too. That well, what other things did Hitler do that we shouldn't do than drink water?
Yeah, it's absurd. I mean, it is absurd, but it's kind of developing into this cartoonish. I mean, historically speaking, too, from any accuracy, historically speaking, by historical standards, this is just utterly preposterous and ridiculous. And it's developed into this cartoon version, which is just, it's not only that it's not true, it's just that it's like exaggerated and blown out into being this thing, this monster, which is just absurd. But I think point is, we could talk about this for quite a while, but my kind of conclusion, if you will, of what is happening right now with this weapon, because that's what this is. It's been weaponizing history, weaponizing a concept, using it against us as a way for us not to be able to assert ourselves and show any kind of interest, group interest, right? So it's,
exactly.
It's been used as a weapon to shut us down. But my point is, I think that it's beginning to wane. It's not taking, if you know what I mean, as much as it used to be. People are just sick and tired of being called Nazis for whatever damn thing that they do that favors their own group
exactly.
interests.
I think more and more people are thinking, if they get that criticism and it hasn't come up yet, they're kind of thinking or can say to themselves, oh, let me guess, am I a Nazi? You know?
Yeah.
That they're kind of taking it ahead of the, before the label has been issued, so to say.
Exactly.
That's also a thing that establishment do, that they do control the language. So they, and that is very strong in how to control the thoughts. But like, for instance, this fake news that came out just, just before Pizzagate. It seems like they introduced fake news to cover up Pizzagate. I'm not sure, but it's really amazing how quickly fake news just spread over the world, and suddenly everybody used fake news.
Yeah.
And it's been used against us too. And we cannot confront anyone on this issue with fake news, because nobody wants to talk about us. They have labeled us to be spreading fake news, but nobody wants to say exactly what have we spread that you consider to be fake news. And it's the same thing. We are spreading hate, but nobody wants to define which of our programs is hate.
Yeah, they never discuss the issues or address the content of our message. They just, exactly. It's amazing. They just avoid it. And they just, yeah, exactly. It's a way of, again, it's anti-intellectual. It's just, it's lazy. There's no debate. There's no issue. It's just that somehow just bringing attention to the issues that we raise in of themselves is a delegitimization of those issues, which is not true.
Yeah. And I think one thing that we in the alternative movement needs to be doing is try to take control of this language thing ourselves. For instance, if somebody says you're a racist, then I'd say one should say that no, I wouldn't call myself a racist. I'm ethnically loyal.
Right.
And there's a lot of groups or ethnic groups that are ethnically loyal. And why can't we be? Why can't we be ethnically loyal?
Holocaust.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's where it ends, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's stupid. Yeah, it is stupid. So tell us a bit about the, you were doxxed recently. You had your identity revealed. I don't know how far you can share the details with this, with the audience here of how this unfolded and what happened and why and all this stuff. But you also, of course, had reporters from Expressen showing up at your door like they have with so many other people. Confronting you on the issue. There was a Diamant Salihu, or what his name again, showed
exactly,
up.
That's
tell us about what happened here.
Yeah. I mean, we have been an irritant to the establishment for a few years now, and they've been really irritated that they don't know who we are. And then there was a journalist that made a few articles on us. He had undercover gotten into our, we have this place research website where we gather our ideas, and we are like, I don't know, 4 or 5 people who can upload scoops and discuss them amongst each other. And he became one of them, and he got into this, and he also called me, and that's one of my longer interviews. He called me and didn't tell me that he had already gotten into our system. And then he published an article, and that was then referenced a lot by the rest of the mainstream. His article was the source for all other articles in Sweden about Review Sweden or Granskning Sverige.
Yeah.
And then there was one journalist who wrote an article, and she referred to us as a troll factory or troll den or something like that. We are constantly referred to as trolls. And I called her and confronted her about why am I a troll. And I put that interview, I published that interview. But when I was working with that, I accidentally, through Skype, sent the search path to the file on my computer as an SMS to her phone.
Oh, no.
And there was a name in it. So then just a few hours later, she called me, and a few hours later, anti-racist Henrik Johansson, inter-racist, not racist, but is a website in Sweden. He called my wife and my daughter, and Expressen also called my wife. My phone number, I had a secret anonymous phone number. I don't use my name in my phone due to this risk.
Mm-hmm.
So then it was me and my family realized that I'm my identity is doxxed, or what you say, my
doxxed. Yeah.
And then the next day, Expressen was on my doorstep to interview me, to give, as they say, give me a chance to issue a statement.
Yeah, right.
Which they, yeah. But I got all that on video, and I posted my video of this encounter like 2 hours later, and then they came out with their articles and their version of the encounter. And they had, of course, mixed it up with the speaker voice and his voice, and then the actual encounter, very small part of the actual encounter, and then more voices and music and stuff. And and I had just put the raw material out. And people had already seen my raw material, and people were really angry that they had gotten to my home. And then Expressen, when they issued their video, they had a comment section, and all the comments were, "You fucking idiots, what are you doing at his home?" and so on.
Yeah.
And after a while, they just closed the comment section.
Of course.
And last time I checked, that video had, like, I don't know, 4,000 views, and my video had 55,000 views.
Yeah, there you go. And did you just notice, I mean, obviously you noticed that, but the tactic also to like try to pull you out from your, you know, from behind your door so that the photographer could photograph you and kind of pull you. I just noticed that the techniques that they're using to, like, you know,
get
you photographed.
They tried to get a picture, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
They did get a picture. I didn't understand. I wasn't careful enough. I was going to try not to give them a picture at all.
Yeah.
But they had the camera going, of course, as soon as I opened the door. But I didn't. I knew that they wanted to have a better picture, so I stayed away and made sure I had the reporter taped continuously. And it was obvious that the whole purpose of their visit was to get picture of the evil racist Nazi fascist Fabian Fjelling, who poses as Erik Johansson on the internet.
Yep, there you go. So what has the fallout from this been so far? More subscribers, maybe?
Oh, yeah. The traffic on our website has just exploded after this.
Yeah.
I had, before, I thought it was a bit low activity on my YouTube channel if it was less than 2,000 views in the last 48 hours. The days after Expressen visited us, I thought it was, it hovered around 45, 50,000 views for the last 48 hours for many days, you know.
Yeah.
So it was absolutely fantastic for Granskning Sverige. It wasn't so fantastic for my family, I must admit. My wife has taken this she has been quite stressed out about this, because they still control a lot what, how should I say, uninterested people think in Sweden, people who don't study these questions. They still believe that Expressen and Dagens Nyheter and all the press in Sweden do give a balanced picture of whatever issue they cover. They a lot of people in Sweden hasn't realized that they lie constantly. But this occurrence, I think a lot of people have woken up just by looking at my video on the encounter and then look at their video, because they have the raw material with me and they have the edited material with Expressen, and they see that this is just not the same thing.
Exactly, and that's why it's so important. And I always tell people who do interviews, record, record, record. You have to be able to prove to people out there, give them a chance, an opportunity to see how they skew, how they change it, how they obscure, how they misrepresent, how they misquote and put, you know, edit you and all those kinds of things. Otherwise, there's no point. We leave the whole power of this in their hands, if you will.
Exactly.
And for us to record the encounters from our end is going to give us the power. Because, see, what happens is that this is a weapon, again, that they use against us to make sure that we don't assert ourselves with our group interest, right? So they're trying to shut us down before we even manage to pull this off, right? But if we can then, when their effort is to use this as a weapon against us by exposing us or writing about us or whatever, or doing an interview, let's say, if we then can record that and show the reality of it, we have effectively turned their propaganda into an even stronger propaganda from our point of view, if you will.
Exactly.
It's the truth, but in the world of war of ideas, we've done like a jujitsu on them, basically, right? Turn the power of it against them.
Intellectual jujitsu, you could call it.
Yeah.
That's also one thing that's it's a bit funny about this, that we were, within quotation marks, exposed as an organization by Mattias Ståhle, who didn't know our identity. And this was blown up in Swedish press, and they even talked about that we were spreading Russian propaganda or yeah, I don't remember.
Always we were with organized. The fucking Russians. What's up with this? What is going on?
Yeah, exactly. It's just so funny. But we were organized troll factory who spreads hate for payment. That was the narrative.
Really?
And then I was exposed, and I could go fully public with what and who we are. And I told them that we are just some amateurs who are totally unorganized. We don't have any money, and we're just asking questions about things we're curious about.
And you're beating them. You're beating them, an organization with like thousands of employees, government subsidized. It's a massive media empire that some of these people are behind. And yet people like us are like winning the propaganda war.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But the thing is that when I was exposed as a person, before I was exposed as a person, I was called by one media outlet. It was the Swedish radio. And I recorded that encounter, and I published the raw material. And people could compare my interview that they heard in the radio and the raw material that I published. And again, they get angry when they compare. And then I was exposed as a person, and nobody calls me. There hasn't been anyone calling me after my exposure of the mainstream media.
Yeah.
Because, well, there have been a few. Actually, I was lying there. There has been an extra call from Expressen, an extra call from the Swedish Stasi organization, Expo, that records people's, they record people's views and have an archive on what people have commented on the internet.
Which is funny. Just remember where you are. Let me just push the pause button there. Which is funny because, of course, one of the stories we always get told in Sweden is how horrible it was when we had what's called åsiktsregistrering, which means opinion registration. And they always used this against the supposed right-wing government at the time towards these violent lefties and stuff. But anyway, you were saying, please continue.
Yeah, this organization, Expo, supplied information to Expressen that they called me about. And they were confronting me about something that I had posted on a website 2013, 4 years ago, on a website that is now shut down since 1 or 2 years ago. I don't know how many years ago. I think it's even more. I think it's 3 years ago it's shut down, that website. So they have archived everything that has been said on this website, and then they've gone through their archives and see if they can find something that I've said, and they find then some statements I've done on a shut down website for 3 years ago, maybe it is.
Yeah.
So they are really an archive of opinions, of anti-establishment opinions. And they call it racism, of course, because if you call it racism, you can do whatever.
Yeah, exactly. There's no questioning of whether or not it's accurate or if it's true or if it's legitimate, the criticism or concerns that we have. It's been a weapon. It's been very efficient, actually.
Yeah.
What else is Expo up to? That you could share with our international audience that don't really know. There's equivalents in America, for example, like ADL or SPLC, similar organizations. They get a lot of money, of course. But what else do you think they should know about the organization?
Well, they supply information to the press, and they are always on the hunt for racism, anti-Semitism, and anything that's... they always spin things so that if anyone expresses any ethnic loyalty amongst Swedish people, then it's turned into racism, and they expose, you know, in quotation marks, that they made racist or anti-Semitic remarks on some web page, or have held a seminar, or they have talked to this guy who is a Nazi, or whatever. And I kind of made a point when I was exposed to actually be interviewed by the Nordic Resistance Movement, which is a organization which has a very strong focus on race in Sweden. And they are, of course, labeled Nazis by the mainstream media. But I knew that if I give them an interview, I will have things to say on the interview. They will portray me the way that I would like to be portrayed. Well, as I knew that if I give Expressen an interview, they will just take what suits their purposes.
Yeah, it's true. And it's always this guilt by association. You're literally not allowed to speak with anybody. It was brought up to me again today. I was being interviewed by a BuzzFeed journalist. And it was this confrontation because of the fact that I agreed on some points where the Nordic Resistance Movement are. But it's like, you're not, even me as a media outlet is like not allowed really to give a voice to people who they consider to be reprehensible, or even the fact that I just basically let these people, give them a chance to speak their mind, tell us what are they about, what do they think, is there any legitimacy to what they think, and you know, how they view the world, right? That's what I want to do. But that's not allowed. See, you're not allowed to be interested in, specifically, of course, as we've talked about now, in history. You're not allowed to investigate or come to your own conclusion or think differently, really. It's an extremely conformist attitude, which is almost like, well, you just shut up, sit down, and like take these opinions by the professionals, and they'll tell you what to think about this. I just resent that.
Exactly, me too. I mean, you could say that ADL and Expo are very similar. They are looking for racism and anti-Semitism on the couch, under your bed, in the cupboard, behind the bushes. It's everywhere for them, you know.
Yeah.
And also, if you talk to anyone they have labeled a Nazi, then you are automatically a Nazi yourself.
Right. Exactly. Absolutely.
And I have made it clear in my interviews and in my talk with the Nordic Resistance Movement that I do agree with some parts and I don't agree with some other parts, but that doesn't stick.
No, you have to come out in an equal manner of opposition and resentment for them that they do. Otherwise, you're not correct, right? So it's this, there's no objectivity, there's no respect for other people's opinions or thinking differently. I think, again, I just go back to that point. I think it's the hysteria around incorrect interpretation of history that's leading these people to believe that they are justified, literally, to smear, to libel, to accuse, to destroy people's careers, to do whatever they need to do to somehow, I guess, defend themselves against people like us, because we somehow we pose a threat to, I don't know, national security or something, or to minorities or something. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, it is a way of I don't know how you say it in English, but söndra och härska.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, it's divide and conquer. Right?
Divide and conquer. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If people get united around something, then they are. It's more difficult to control them. It's more difficult to use them, and I think that's the one of the main reasons why it's so touchy if, especially, white people get united around being white Christians.
Yep. So we're going to take a break in a little bit here. I want to talk more about you. We have much more to discuss. It's a very interesting conversation, taking a pulse, if you will, reading the pulse of the media environment in Sweden and what really is happening. But tell us about this Russia thing a little bit, because you told me off air before we started that Stratfor, is it? The EU body has actually looked into some of these accusations, and they're taking somehow that this is Russian propaganda, that kind of spin. Tell us more about this.
Yeah, it's East Stratcom Task Force. It's an organization within the EU, which is there to counteract Russian propaganda. And last time I checked, we were number two on their list. And we, I mean, we are two amateurs that has been joined by a couple of more amateurs that are totally unorganized, totally no money. And we are one of the main Russian propaganda sources in the EU. So, I mean, it must be really, really Russian propaganda free in EU if we are one of the main ones.
Imagine what you could do with Putin money.
Yeah, exactly. We've actually talked about calling Russia and ask if we can get some money.
Yeah, reach out. Exactly. If you're accused of it anyways, then you might as well take the money, right?
Exactly. But this exposure by Expressen has actually led to that. We have received quite a bit of money. I mean, a lot of people have donated, just flooded in money, which it's gone down now a little bit. But we got a bit of money from that exposure. We have also gotten contact with investors who actually want to help us. That's what they say. They want to help us to grow.
Mm. Yeah. Yep. Be careful and vet these people, obviously, and make sure they're all right and everything else. I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, legitimate people. So I'm not trying to just be paranoid and suspicious for the sake of it. But since you've already been, like, you know, infiltrated on your group website you had and stuff like that, definitely want to watch out for that.
But it's not a secret. I mean,
it's not.
It's just to contact us. You want to have access to our research website, and we give it. I mean, it's not. You don't need to be a hacker. You just call me.
Well, exactly. And that's what's so funny about all of this. Like, people like us, we're open. Like, we want to talk with these people. We want to try to figure out what's going on. We actually want to have a debate. We want to discuss these things. And just, it's so difficult to initiate this. As you said, your most common experience is that people just hang up on you.
Yeah, exactly. Amazing. And their excuse have been that they don't know who I am. They don't know my identity. Well, now they know my identity. Today I've called Expo again to discuss the article they wrote about me. They still don't want to talk with me. They only want to talk about me.
Yeah, it's amazing. All right. Well, let's take a short break here in just a few moments, and then we'll talk more in the second segment, ladies and gentlemen. It's very interesting. Tell us then a little bit about, obviously, all of the material is in Swedish. That's the main focus. We have a lot of Swedes listening, of course. So if they are, I'm sure they're probably all of them familiar with your work already. But tell us how people can listen. Tell us how people can support the work you do. I wish that people like you actually were in a position where you had regular funding. You could actually do this full time. There is a dire need for organizations like yours in this environment, in the information warfare, if you will, that we're involved in. And I wish that more people would come to your aid. And that's why I encourage people to help you guys out. Make sure that, you know, someone like you and your team could provide a full-time, you know, service basically in what you do. And this would be a true public service, right? Yeah. It would actually offer a differing opinion. It would help to break the monopoly that they have in the Swedish media.
Yeah, that's one of our main focus, to break the monopoly of judgment over what's an extreme view and what's not extreme view. They always label that's right-wing extremist. And that's also one issue we've asked. When do you become extreme? What is an extreme view? But they never talk about that. But we have a website that's Granskning Sverige. I guess that's a bit difficult for Americans but it's granskningsverige.se. And we also have on YouTube, if you search for Granskning Sverige. My YouTube channel now, I renamed to Fabian Fjelling, FabianFjelling. So I think if you YouTube search that, my channel comes up. We have a couple of main channels, but it's mine, it's Johan, who is the founder. We have one that's called Feministinspektionen, which is some women who are calling and confronting feminists. Mainly, well, they confront insanity. We have actually one very popular clip from Feminist Inspektionen, which was published on the Geller Report, which is, I don't remember the name of it, but it's about how Gothenburg City Council is importing camels to put Somalis to work.
Yeah, I talked about that story. It's hilarious. Yeah.
people think it's a prank, but it's not. It's a real phone call.
Man, it's amazing.
And that's also one thing that we actually would like, we could use help with, is putting subtitles to our clips. There are subtitles to the most important ones, but it would be nice to have subtitles to everything, of course. But it takes so much time to put subtitles on it, and we need to make other calls. And now we also have to organize this. Yeah, that actually is going to be an organized organization.
Yeah, that's good. You guys are stepping up your game and expanding, basically. It's really good to hear. So we'll have links up to this, ladies and gentlemen, obviously the YouTube channels, the main website and everything else. So if you do have a difficult time with the spelling, just go to redice.tv and click on the show notes, so the links here as well. And of course, you can just use Google Translate and translate the website if you're going to read some of their entries and stuff like that. All right. Well, Fabian, stay with us. We're going to take a short break here. Then we'll return with the second segment in just a little bit. Good stuff coming up. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Well, guys, if you enjoy the show, please sign up for a membership with us to catch the second hour of the program. We have well over 1,200 radio shows right now. We have archives going back to 2006. We do several new shows each week, and we also do a live TV show that you can watch most Saturdays, exclusive for our members. When you subscribe, you also get access to all Radio 314 shows hosted by Lana, and you can watch all the other video content and live coverage that we do as well. So help us produce more, cover more, and bring on more people. Support independent alt-right media. Go to redicemembers.com and sign up now. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you right after the break. We'll be right back.